In the Declaration of Independence, the founders said that our rights come from the Creator, and the first of those that they listed is the right to life. But that is a right undermined by abortion in America. Recently, there was a victory for the pro-life movement in the state of Illinois. The state had passed a law that critics say curtailed the free speech rights of pro-life pregnancy centers. But thanks to the intervention of the Christian legal group, the Thomas More Society, this law has been put on hold. The Thomas More Society writes, quote, This massive victory makes it clear that pro-life speech cannot be singled out and pregnancy help ministries cannot be discriminated against by the state of Illinois on account of their viewpoint, end quote. And we're going to talk right now with Peter Breen, special counsel with the Thomas More Society, about this particular law and what's wrong with it and where we go from here. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Peter, we welcome you back to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Jerry. Great to be here.
Sure. Okay, so explain to us this law. And by the way, in the, you know, just a couple years ago in California, they had a law that was very similar, a law that basically discriminated against the pro-life pregnancy centers. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court smacked down the law and said, you can't do that. You can't discriminate against their free speech rights. And yet Illinois passed a similar law, as I understand it, and expected to get away with it.
Well, and, you know, this is just the latest attempt by folks who are anti-life. They're anti-pregnancy help centers, and they are just doing everything they can to try to constrict the activities of these help centers and of pro-life sidewalk counselors outside of the abortion clinics, in this case, in the state of Illinois. You know, that case in California a few years back, the state of California wanted the centers to post a bunch of notices, which were, you know, against what they wanted to share, you know, trying to make them seem like they were less than real health facilities because they wouldn't offer abortions, which, of course, we know that abortion is not healthcare, and we have sincere objections to having anything to do with abortion or trying to, you know, justify abortion in that sense. Here in Illinois, though, they took a different tack. Instead, they declared certain types of pro-life speech to be deceptive. They called it misinformation, you know, similar to what we've seen in the COVID context of the last few years. They said, well, you know, your claims about abortion and its harms and risks are false. They're overstated. And so this was a very aggressive law trying to dictate to people of faith and people of life what the government believed would be true or false. And the First Amendment to the Constitution prohibits the government from telling you what is or is not true or false on an issue of significant public concern.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's obviously very much pro-abortion in her rights or in her views, she said that these crisis pregnancy centers are even harmful. To me, these centers are doing, you know, so much good to help women in crisis. Meanwhile, the abortion centers are all about making money and profits off of these poor women who are, you know, in a desperate plight.
Absolutely. And, you know, we as a movement had taken on a long time ago the idea we want more pregnancy help centers than there are abortion facilities. In our country, we're at around 700 or so abortion facilities, and we're over 3,000 pregnancy resource centers, depending on how you count them. But certainly we've now done our work. But with the advent of the abortion pills and the other ways that people can do abortions at home and things like that, it's more important than ever that pregnancy resource centers are everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter if you're in a blue state or a red state, you know, very pro-abortion state, very pro-life state. We need these centers everywhere. And the other side knows that. And so they're doing everything they can, not out of a real sense of trying to help people, but just to try to come after their political opponents. You know, a woman who has a brief visit to a pregnancy help center and decides to have her baby, you know, obviously that woman should not have, even for pro-choice on abortion people, there's no argument that that woman should have somehow had an abortion when after a brief visit with some caring individuals offering some assistance, she decides for life. So that's really where this, you know, these interventions by Senator Warren and others, they're just, it's not done in good faith, frankly.
The majority of women, now this is a shocking statistic, but I'm sure you've seen the studies about this. The majority of women that have abortions have expressed that that wasn't their first choice. In other words, they felt compelled to do so and had no support otherwise. But this is something you would never hear, you know, in the mainstream media.
Right. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, the latest numbers I've seen, 60% or so felt coerced or forced into that abortion.
Okay. Now wait, just think about this, Peter. What's the key term used? Choice. Oh, this is, we're pro-choice. We're in favor of abortion rights. Pro-choice? Well, if 60% feel that they had no choice, then where's the choice? Oh, and that's another thing. If the Elizabeth Warren's types got, and Governor Pritzker for that matter, got their way, the women wouldn't have choice, as in the example of the crisis pregnancy center. So much for this farcical term, pro-choice.
Absolutely. And when you're looking at it, when you're trying to make a significant decision, do you look at the best information provided by both sides, or do you automatically exclude one side and only take the people that are trying to sell you a product, you know, a particular product? I mean, and I don't mean to, reduce the extreme, you know, murderous significance of the abortion industry, but, you know, they're trying to sell you an abortion. Our folks are offering you the other side of that. Certainly if you're looking at this, you know, a permanent decision like this, it would behoove most folks, you'd say, hey, you know, show me both sides. Tell me what are my options? What help is available to me? And we have thousands upon thousands of women visit and work with pregnancy help centers across our country, and they decide for life. And those are babies that are now going to be born that otherwise who very well could have been aborted.
Wow. Okay, so is this whole matter closed in the state of Illinois, or is the state appealing so they can try and get this law to go into effect? And by the way, just give us a little bit of the history of it and where your legal action intervened.
Well, and so we saw that this was actually a really good example of how the pro-life movement came together, even in a very blue state, what's become a very blue state, the state of Illinois. The activists identified this bill early and notified the legislators. The legislators were right on this one, very strong, trying to really get at it and give it a good hard hearing in the committees. You know, after the first.
I'm so sorry. When you're talking about the activists, are you talking about the pro-lifers, or are you talking about the?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Right. So our pro-life advocates, across the state identified this bill early on as a real problem and one that just would present an existential threat to the survival of our pregnancy help ministries. And so got the legislators involved right away. We got the lawyers involved pretty early on. And so we had a good, strong hearing in the Illinois Senate. It was a hearing in a committee there. And the deputy attorney general actually testified. Based on that testimony, we went out and filed a FOIA request 2 days later and started a process where we were able to show the evidence to undermine the claims of the attorney general. The attorney general said, well, we've had numerous reports and complaints of deceptive practices. We said, well, here's a FOIA request. Give us all those reports and complaints for the last 10 years, we said. They couldn't come up with a single one.
Wait, this is a huge headline. You're saying that they claimed that the reason they needed this law is because of all these complaints that have come forward from women complaining about these crisis pregnancy centers being supposedly deceptive, and because of the FOIA, you know, I'm sorry, I just want to recap our top story here. I think this is huge news.
So we were able to get those FOIA requests back, and they fought us. You know, it went back and forth. It was 8 different communications with the attorney general's office. And finally, we got back that they did not have a leg to stand on. Well, then enough time had passed that the bill was in the House, but we got the final FOIA response back before the House committee hearing, provided that to the legislators, and they just hauled off on the Deputy Attorney General and the advocates from Planned Parenthood. So we had a great House committee hearing and then have a really good floor debate on the House floor where, I mean, our folks were showing clearly, our good pro-life legislators showing clearly no need for this law. It was targeted at pro-life speech instead of being neutral, which is required. You'd mentioned, you know, viewpoint discrimination is what we call that under the Constitution, but also content discrimination, because it's taking something that is an issue of significant public importance and declaring winners and losers, saying what's true and what's false, which you can't do as a government. And so we had all of this evidence together. So we knew it was going to pass. I mean, unfortunately, just the way things were going. But what we did was built such a great legislative record that we were able to turn around as the lawyers. So when they, you know, when it passed out of the House, pretty much that meant the matter was handed off to us as lawyers. We were ready with a lawsuit when the governor signed that thing. So went on, it was July 27th when the governor signed that bill at noon. We had the lawsuit on file by 1 o'clock. And then the attorney general did his press conference at 2 o'clock to crow about having this new bill, which was his signature bill. That nearly every question at the attorney general's press conference was about the lawsuit that had just been filed against him. So, you know, and how in the world he could say this was not viewpoint discriminatory and content discriminatory. So this was a great example. Then we followed it through to court and we got our preliminary injunction. So great example of the pro-life movement working together very well. To help drive a victory. Now, it's an interim victory. I will say that. It's a preliminary injunction. Good news, the state, their appeal deadline has passed. So at least we're going to have a preliminary injunction through the end of the case, and we're going to fight this hard. We've got a favorable judge. You know, he's indicated he thinks the law is unconstitutional. But, you know, so that's the process we're in right now. We're in a federal district court, Northern District of Illinois, and now we're going to go through the litigation process until its conclusion.
Okay, and translate for us the preliminary injunction. What exactly does this mean?
Sure. So preliminary injunction, that's the – you get an injunction that now means the law cannot take effect until the end of your lawsuit. And so then at the end of the lawsuit, we were hoping for a permanent injunction. And
okay,
you know,
so
based on that early ruling that said, hey, I think this law is unconstitutional, this is the judge – you know, we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to get that permanent injunction as well.
You know, the old phrase, follow the money, you know, the left used to always say that, you know, and so forth. But think about this in terms of the big picture of what we've been talking about here. Who funds the crisis pregnancy centers?
Yeah,
volunteers,
it's just folks like you and me.
Churches.
I mean, it's regular folks.
Okay. Who funds Planned Parenthood? Who in Planned Parenthood, don't they give a lot of money to these politicians that are, oh, we got to shut down these crisis pregnancy centers because they're doing harm to women, supposedly?
Absolutely. And it's really, it is totally a political, you know, it's political. You know, I served in the Illinois General Assembly. And so, you know, look, I mean, money talks, and that's how politics works. So you always follow that. You know, when the attorney general's press conference he had on the day this bill was signed, he had it at Planned Parenthood's headquarters in front of a big Planned Parenthood banner. So it made it very clear, both, you know, it's clear for the public, and it was clear for the, you know, we put this information to the judge that, hey, you know, they weren't trying to, defend against deceptive practices. He was trying to do a political favor for his, you know, for his political patron, Planned Parenthood.
Isn't that amazing? ThomasMoreSociety.org for more information. How about a 20-second closing thought on this whole issue of right to life in this particular bill?
Sure. We, across the country, we are going to have new threats, especially in these blue states, where they're doing everything possible to shut down our speech. Because if in a fair fight, in a fair debate, we can win, we can convince folks for life. So that is why it is so important to maintain this space, our free speech rights in these blue states, so we can save more babies. Again, ThomasMoreSociety.org, and Moore is with 1-0, ThomasMoreSociety.org for more updates.
Peter Breen, thanks so much. All the best.
Hey, thank you, Jerry.